Hello out there on the internet. This is David Rovics with a webinar, which is a word I don't think I ever used before. But what the heck, you know, it's like a workshop seminar on the web. I don't know. A webinar on DIY music, do-it-yourself music in a time of pandemic is the title of the webinar. A week ago, I did a webinar on pandemic songwriting. And so this week on this Monday's webinar is on the topic of DIY music, or basically DIY is a term that became popular, I don't know when, but certainly in the 80s, and I believe is still well known, which means do it yourself, which is about the independent indie non-corporate music scene reality, which has existed for a long time. And I just realized I don't need these headphones because I'm not doing a interview. I'm just talking. And so I'll just leave the headphones out unless somebody pops up on the screen and wants to, you know, talk to me about this, like perhaps some other songwriter who has knowledge in the subject. I should interview one. Actually, I will be. In fact, tomorrow I'll be interviewing Jim Page. The interviews I'm doing on the live stream broadcasts at 10 a.m. Pacific right now, you know, 1 p.m. New York, 5 p.m. GMT, 6 p.m. GMT, right? Time changed. These are happening every weekday morning, pretty much, at least this week and next week. I'm doing an interview every weekday morning from Tuesday to Friday with somebody. Except for Mondays, which have been reserved for more solo sort of webinar type things like this, and like last week's pandemic songwriting webinar. And but then I'm going to stop with the webinars with this one for now and move, let Mondays become pandemic open mic Mondays. And if you go to davidrovics.com/quarantine, you can read about that and sign up for an open mic. I got the sign up sheet all set up and information about it set up, and I'll be hosting it on this platform that I'm using right now, which is StreamYard. And which is a cool platform for doing this sort of thing, if you're into that sort of thing. And I will get on with this workshop. But first of all, very importantly, we are broadcasting on multiple platforms, including YouTube, Facebook, Twitter/Periscope, and LinkedIn, VK, and Twitch. And whatever platform you might be watching in, if you could share this with anybody else who might like to see this webinar, that would be great, because it will be archived on YouTube and it will be appearing as a podcast later if anybody searches for This Week with David Rovics on any podcasting platform. It will be there as a podcast. But it is also a live stream happening right now, and I would love to respond to any questions that anybody has, but that requires you to be watching this right now in real time. So feel free to share those, share this window, this link, whatever, with people in whatever forms, and then we'll get on with the webinar. And if you want to support what I'm doing, you can always go to davidrovics.com/subscribe or patreon.com/davidrovics. And I'm just assuming everybody can hear okay, or somebody would have said something about that. So last week I was talking about pandemic songwriting, or, you know, basically topical songwriting, specifically related to the pandemic, but also just generally topical songwriting. And there were a lot of people in various forums who were talking about how they would love to get more information about the more technical stuff, about like logistical stuff, like basically how to share music and other art that is that people are writing and using the internet basically, and survival and all sorts of other questions around the sharing of music, the participation in various forms of community online when it comes to sharing music, and also the monetization of that, as far as like to whatever extent it's possible for people to make money from music that they may be writing or sharing in any forms online. And these are areas of expertise for me. And so I will happily share whatever knowledge I have on these subjects. And of course, once again, if anybody has questions related to these subjects, then I'd love to get them from you on the whatever platform you're watching on. I can see your questions coming up here on my screen. So just feel free to send them along and I will get to them in some kind of sensible order. So first I thought that I would start with talking about just backing up and talking about the history of DIY music and where it has gone from, you know, 100 years ago to the present, basically. Very, very brief history. But there have always been, you know, there's like ever since the advent of the sort of music industry, the corporate music industry, sometime 100 years ago, 130 years ago, whatever we want to, wherever we want to say it exactly began, 110 years ago, Tin Pan Alley or whatever, but it's somewhere around a century ago. And then, of course, record players came along after sheet music. I mean, there was already a big music industry that was around sheet music. But then when recorded music came along, it got a lot bigger. And then when radio came along, it became popular by the 1920s, then it got far bigger still and became a major industry. And commercial radio was and commercial record labels were always problematic for all kinds of reasons, putting musicians into boxes. Racism was rife. The whole boxes that they put musicians into were race-based in the United States. And also, of course, any kind of political commentary, regardless of your race, was not encouraged generally, and other kinds of commentary around romance and less potentially dangerous subjects was encouraged by the music industry. So there's always been this problematic relationship between the music industry and society, and the music industry and independent music. So in response to commercial radio, there was community radio. In response to big labels and their dominance, there were independent labels. And oddly enough, by skipping way ahead to the 80s, like when Reagan deregulated TV and radio, and then later Clinton deregulated it far more and created a situation where basically a handful of corporations controlled the airwaves and also globally pretty much controlled the record companies. What happened in the 80s was a proliferation of very independently produced music in the form of cassettes, which had become very easy to reproduce. So technology was starting to really have an impact in terms of making the whole production of music a much more accessible thing for people on a grassroots basis. You didn't have to have a record pressing machine or, you know, all kinds of fancy expensive equipment that was really only, you know, existing in places like New York and LA and Nashville. You know, it was becoming a much more DIY phenomenon because of the technical innovation of cassettes and recording technology. And it was a big deal for a lot of the record companies. They were freaking out about it, people making mixtapes and copying you know, pirate copies of albums onto cassettes, you know. And that became, despite the fact that we independent musicians were largely locked out of commercial airplay and largely locked out of so-called public, shows on so-called public radio in the U.S., there was still the avenue of traveling around and selling your cassettes and getting on community radio and college radio. And you know, so there were a whole sort of independent realm for musicians that were not on corporate labels and didn't have record contracts and were not getting sold in the stores or commercial airplay. There was a whole world of people that just ignored all that and went, got along, you know, fine, and did their thing with selling cassettes, traveling, touring, playing at universities and wherever. And that whole underground scene was fairly large, and I don't know how many people were involved with it altogether. You know, depends on how you define that, but it was a lot of people. And so that started falling apart. It continued to thrive, you know, in many ways, through the 90s with the advent of CDs, and into the first 10 or 13 years or so of this century as well. But then there was this whole new sort of contradiction in the first, say, 10 years of this century, or the last year or so of the 90s, around piracy of music online in the form of MP3s. And this whole, what was this? You know, this was like a new seismic thing, much bigger than mixtapes and cassettes. And ultimately, it ended up basically, destroying the corporate music industry and much of the independent music industry too, by removing the element of the industry that was a vital part of the survival for musicians at every level of the industry, which was merch sales, CD sales in particular, which have never been replaced by any other form of merch sales as far as I know. So the collapse of the music industry, which went from being what the size it was in the 90s to being like 20 years later, like 20% or so less of what it had been, across the board, it affected a lot of people. Although I think it wasn't totally universal. There were a lot of independent musicians who embraced the giving away of their music as a form of protest against the fact that Clear Channel dominated the radio and there was no hope of getting radio play. So for some of us, the piracy was something that that actually for a lot of us, I think for a lot of DIY musicians, it was something that we were able to embrace. And that was especially helpful in a way, because the big record industries were saying that what was happening was piracy and was illegal and bad, and so that also helped to I think a lot of people felt the that if they were going to be getting free music from people who were purposefully giving it away, that they should be supporting those musicians in one way or another. And so in many ways, there was the pros and cons to that whole thing from an economic standpoint. And from, of course, from a cultural standpoint, it was an amazing thing, because suddenly music was free for everybody around the world, basically, and who had internet connection. And that has been overall for most people, I think, maybe there's the too much information aspect of it for sure. But overall, it has been, a positive thing for regular people, but a very mixed thing for musicians and the music industry, which was a largely, in terms of the commercial industry, was a largely broken phenomenon to begin with that needed to be reformed. So that's kind of like bringing us up now to the present moment, sort of, or not to the present, but brings up to 2013. Okay, so just a very condensed history here. But then this sort of, what you could say, the new normal. If you hear sounds of crying children, they in the background, by the way, they are with their mother. So I don't know what's going on, but I'll just ignore that for the moment and continue here. This is very common circumstance for anybody doing these broadcasts. If you're not one of these people quarantining by yourself, you're quarantined with your family in my case, a small apartment. But I'll just continue yapping. The new normal sort of since 2013, when Spotify started their free platform and completely basically pulled the rug out from under everything else, that had been going on. I mean, merch sales had been declining, but they declined much more dramatically soon after. And Spotify started their free platform. And so what happened basically as soon as Spotify started their free platform, it was not coincidentally, although I don't know, how much people were making the connection necessarily, but what happened then was the rise of crowdfunding. Kickstarter and Indiegogo and various platforms started up and started becoming much more popular. If they already existed before then, they started getting more popular. And this was, sort of naturally a consequence of the music industry, of it not being possible to be selling CDs and that sort of thing. People had to fund their CD projects somehow, and it was no longer something they could fund from selling CDs. And so they started crowdfunding to raise money for album projects, which also started becoming overall a lot more humble in their aims and for a lot of musicians in terms of how many musicians were involved with the project, how much time it took. People started downsizing in a lot of ways because contrary to whatever mythology might be out there, these things are expensive and often involve a lot of musicians and engineers and people who are actually being paid union wages and that sort of thing. And you can't pay for that if you're not selling CDs. So a lot of projects, a lot of people started recording at home for better, for worse, and doing things with more stripped down arrangements and just not recording or recording less. But of course, other people who were not traditionally like making a living as musicians started recording more. So there's certainly a lot more stuff out there, and it's just less, lower quality in various objective sorts of ways, but lots of great stuff as well, of course. But anyway, the musicians who were trying to still record albums and pay musicians and studios and that sort of thing were crowdfunding for their projects to a large extent when it was not something that you could get paid for by a label or by selling CDs. And then when it became evident that that crowdfunding the albums was only part of the solution, a lot of musicians started turning to platforms like Patreon and other sort of ongoing subscription type of platforms for doing for crowdfunding their whole lives. And this was also a consequence of realizing that having lost half of their income from no more CD sales and with oftentimes rents rising and this kind of thing, they had to not just replace the lost income for recording costs, but also for just all kinds of life costs. And so a lot of musicians started touring a lot more as a way, in addition to crowdfunding through platforms like Patreon, they started touring a lot more because it became the sort of received wisdom that you can run across in mainstream media and all sorts of places, that the what musicians can do with the way they can make a living now is from touring, which is not a new thing. The touring has always been a major aspect of how musicians got by, especially independent musicians, and that were not selling millions of CDs, but and when they did sell CDs, were largely selling them on tour at shows. So that was how many musicians who did manage to survive, which is, I think, only something like half of them or less after this big culling of the ranks of musicians by Spotify and other technological and corporate conscious corporate developments that were happening, sort of Spotify's dominance along the lines of like Uber and Lyft, the way that they've been spending and I'm working at a loss in order to destroy the rest of the industry and take over the world. So the consequences, there have been many consequences, but touring more is one of the ways that a lot of musicians attempted to make up for the loss of income. But it didn't really work for most of them because the gigs are generally paying less and the venues are shrinking and having all kinds of problems with paying their own rent. And this is true in both North America and Europe. And so touring doesn't necessarily bring in more money. It tends to bring in less money, and then you don't sell CDs at the show. So, you certainly have to tour more, but even that is not going to be, enough to compensate for the loss of income without a big step up in things like Patreon and patronage, crowdfunding. So that brings us up to the current period with the pandemic, which is that touring, which was the solution, to the problem of not being able to sell merch or not, that was supposed to be the solution. Now it's not an option anymore, right? So that's why, if you've been hearing about the number of musicians who are in absolutely dire straits at the current moment, it's because they are not in a situation where they're like it used to be. Maybe half your income was from CD sales at shows, and also most musicians who are actively doing this sort of thing would get lots of CD orders in the mail. You'd be constantly going to the post office if you were a musician. That was a very regular place to hang out. So that's no more. So replacing the loss of touring with that isn't happening for musicians. And so so of course, obviously, there's now expanded unemployment benefits, and hopefully a lot of musicians who are still out there trying to survive will be qualifying for those benefits. But in the meantime, what are ways that musicians, whether or not they're trying to survive at music, or whether they're just trying to share their music online, these things are very related. So it's hard to separate. They're all, sharing, being good at sharing your music online is also essential to surviving as a musician. So it's these things can't necessarily be separated. If you're sort of interested in one subject or the other, they're both they both go together. But just to sort of bring us to the current moment where touring isn't an option, selling merch isn't an option. The internet is all that there is, particularly, now in this period of pandemic and no gigs for people in actual physical spaces. So there are other ways to survive and to share your music in this whole online world, without touring and without selling physical CDs, it is still actually possible to actually make a living as a musician and to share your music you know, quite a bit and get it out there in many different forms quite a bit. And this can be done. This is not necessarily facilitated by a lot of the platforms that are out there, which actually don't help you really share your music very well, like Facebook. You know, it's really much more about sharing pictures of your children, and you know, the algorithms are set up to promote things like, you know, birth, deaths, weddings, and, you know, that sort of thing, and not to promote, you know, to help somebody promote their own music. It used to be different, but, you know, our means of communication are really largely controlled by a handful of corporations, which is not helpful at all for what we're talking about here, despite whatever people may have heard. Things were a lot better in terms of sharing your music online and reaching people, a large audience. Things were much better 10, 12, 15 years ago than they are now. Having been doing it then, I can tell you that unequivocally, that things have not gotten better with these platforms' dominance. They've gotten worse. It was better when it was illegal. And you know, when it was piracy, it was there. Then you could have more control over how you were sharing your music and how people got it, and whether you got their email list and whether their emails and you could put them on your list and communicate with them directly. You know, now so much of this happens through platforms that it is not helpful for us. But there are ways to try to work with the limitations built in to these platforms. And this one of the reasons why live streaming has become such a popular activity is because it's one of the ways you can work with those limitations, because most of these platforms, to one degree or another for now, are still really promoting live streams that are happening on their platform. So if somebody starts live streaming on a Facebook page that you have liked, then you are likely to see, if you're on your computer or phone at the time, then you're likely to see them pop up on your screen as somebody who is live streaming right now. So, and then of course, later you can make videos and audio podcasts out of your live streams if you do that. So there are lots of different ways to reach people through these kinds of means. And so that is a popular way for people to be communicating, getting out there and doing their thing, whether it's just workshops or interviews or talking. And there's lots of different platforms that you've been hearing all about that people are using for these sorts of activities, like Zoom has become the most popular one, although it may or may not be the best one, depending on what you're trying to do. There's lots of others if you're trying to do a broadcast as opposed to just a conversation. You know, some may be better than others, and there are lots of limitations in terms of it really doesn't work very well unless you can plug in a broadband connection and use a laptop. If you're using a cell phone or something on Wi-Fi, it's likely to be a problem in terms of the how well it works, especially for doing any kind of music. It's the sound quality really suffers. So it's that's one of the big drawbacks with live streaming, and one of the big pluses for recording things in advance, if you don't suffer from the compression, although you still then need to know how to place microphones and that sort of thing to get a good quality recording. It's so much about the mic and where you place it, and I'm still very much working on these things, as I so long resisted learning anything about being a good engineer, thinking that I was a songwriter and I was going to write songs and play music and let other people worry about other aspects of this process. And that is more and more not a good orientation. More and more people are learning how to do many different things, and of course part of that is also part of it is necessity, but part of it is also that technology makes a lot of these things easier. So nowadays you can fairly well host and perform in the same event without too much of a logistical problem. So I'll just take a little moment here to say that we are, as people who are commenting randomly there are aware, we're broadcasting on a number of different platforms. And if anybody has a question, please feel free to put one in there in the comments there. And it seems like there's a couple of people have said there's something happening with Facebook buffering. And so if you're watching on Facebook, you might want to switch to a different platform like twitch.tv/DavidRovix. Usually has less problems with buffering and that sort of thing. We're also broadcasting on YouTube and on Periscope/Twitter and VK and LinkedIn. And if you're interested in how that works with broadcasting on lots of platforms, you can two different ways you can do that: restream.io and also StreamYard. They're both different. They have different strengths and some crossover in terms of what they do, and other ways that they don't do the same thing. But they're both really cool platforms. You have to pay for them, as is often the case with the platforms that really do useful things. There are free versions that are not very useful, but the paid versions are useful. So, you know, one of the challenges and advantages to the internet is, and to the various platforms is, you know, you potentially have the ability to reach a lot of people, and the music you're putting out there anyway, it's not incurring great expense for you to put it out there other than the cost of recording and your survival. So if you can get it out there in various forms and people hear it in large numbers, I always used to say back in the days of when I was giving away my music in forms, that I was able to keep track of people a little better and get them onto my email list and communicate with them. But I figured it was a general rule that for every 1,000 people who downloaded one of my songs, one of them would organize a gig. And that statistic may or may not have been exactly accurate, but it seemed to be about right. I was getting like maybe at some long before Spotify and these other streaming platforms existed, I was getting something like 100,000 people downloading my songs every year for free. And that was at around 100 gigs. So I figured there was this kind of relationship between the numbers of downloads and the number of gigs, which may or may not have had anything to do with why I got 100 gigs a year or whatever. You know, it was just but it seemed like there was some kind of relationship between a certain number of people download songs, and eventually you're going to hear from one of them, like, who says, oh, I heard your music online and I want to organize a gig for you. I mean, this is also how it works, right? And one of the things, one of my favorite, perhaps only, you know, major sort of business strategy with sharing music and giving away music online is basically, which I think works much better than giving away exclusive stuff to your paid supporters, although that there's a place for doing that too. What is the most effective thing is what the marketing people call a freemium, which is basically you're giving away all your music as you would anyway, much the way like Pacifica or National Public Radio or other, you know, BBC, you know, not necessarily BBC because they're government funded, but like NPR. You know, you're getting all this free content that you can listen to if you turn on the radio or your, you know, NPR app on your phone or whatever, TuneIn app to listen to the radio on your phone or whatever you're doing, and you're getting all this free content 24/7. But they are also, you know, interrupting their programming now and then to ask you to support what they do and to become a, you know, paid monthly subscriber or that kind of thing. And this is the same model you can use when you're doing live streams or giving away songs or recording albums or, you know, any number of different ways of getting your, of sharing your music and sharing your thoughts and sharing your essays or your art or anything else. And And if you're using a platform like Patreon, I definitely recommend not using just one platform and not just doing everything on one platform regardless. But when you're using a platform like Patreon, you can make an announcement, say that you've got a new album or you've got a new live stream out or you've a new podcast or you just wrote a song, and you can turn that into an announcement and share it with people for free on Patreon. And then you can share that link where you just shared the free music, and then you can share it more broadly. So then we're doing, and then I get a phone call. I'm going to turn that phone over so I don't see who's calling me while I'm doing this broadcast. They're obviously not listening to my live stream if they're calling me. So then you're sharing the content, whatever it is that you're sharing, for free, but you can do it, in various ways, where there is a sort of implication, whether it's direct or implied, that you accept donations and that tipping is welcome, or that if people really support what you do and want to continually support what you do, then they can become monthly paid supporters on Patreon. And by the way, they get some free exclusive content by doing that. So you can use platforms like that to give away. Now there's a donation link on SoundCloud. Like, so if you're putting out audio on SoundCloud, you can have the donation link appear there. I'm not at all saying that this is an ideal solution to the problem that not being able to tour and not being able to sell merch, and having these platforms take over our means of communication with each other. It is not an ideal situation by any means, but I'm just talking about how you can try to work with it. What are some ways that you can try to work with it? And Logan Anderson comments, I feel like if someone like Phil Oakes were alive in today's music industry, his head would be spinning. And I have no idea how Phil might be relating to the music industry. He was extremely frustrated by it in his own day, because as he himself noted, he sold way more albums in the places where he lived in, where he was doing more gigs, than in other parts of the country, which is a condemnation of the record labels that he was on, because if they were really promoting him the way that they promote other artists, then he would have been selling a lot more on the, say, the West Coast, although he lived on the East Coast, but that was not happening. And I think a lot of people of his generation, of course he didn't, live to see later days, but a lot of people that I know who did survive past the 70s and are living today, who are used to the idea that you can get on a record label and the record label does this and that, or you're a writer and you can get a publisher and the publisher will do this and that, and that your job is to go on speaking tours and to write your book, and you shouldn't have anything to do with crowdfunding or fundraising or any number of other activities, self-promotion, whatever, they get lost. I mean, and very frustrated and unhappy and depressed. And, these times, the way things work now, it's really better if you're young and never knew what it was like before, or if you're very adaptable. Because, if you were around 20 years ago and you know how easy it was, comparatively easy it was, to make a living as an independent musician. I never thought I'd say that, and I'm sure nobody at the time ever thought people would say that it was easy. But compared to now, it was easy. And it's better to be young and not to know what it was like before, because you'll just be depressed, probably, unless you're just really, allergic to depression and tend to be optimistic anyway and just get on with it, like me and a lot of other people, but you know, most musicians stopped making music as a for a living in the past 20 years, and that is borne out by all kinds of statistics from census. And yeah, it's you know, there are a lot of people playing music, but they're not making a living at it. And Luca asks, what are the problems with the solution you said wasn't ideal? Well, the problems with the solution. Well, I mean, in a way, that in a sense, there's no problems because I don't know what other solutions there are. So in a way, if the solution is the solution, then maybe there are no problems with it because other things are not an option. But if other but what would be better would be if we artists had control over our art, in the sense that, like, if it were not a choice between joining Spotify on their terms or being locked out of streaming platforms. That's basically your option now. Like, you can get onto a different streaming platform that nobody uses, but then what's the point of that? I mean, you can also, you know, if you're trying to meet people at a club, you're not going to go for a walk in the woods. You know, a walk in the woods is a very nice thing to do, and I love taking walks in the woods. But you don't go for a walk in the woods if you're trying to meet a bunch of people, you know, because they're not going to be there, right? By the same token, there's no point in using a streaming platform that nobody's listening to, right? You want to use Spotify and iTunes because that's where people are and that's where they can hear your music. But if you do that, then you're agreeing to all their terms. And these terms were created by a massive corporation with massive numbers of investors who are trying to disrupt and have successfully disrupted the music industry from the top to the bottom all over the world and have caused untold suffering all over the world by what they're doing. And, you know, so if Spotify did not exist, and if these vulture capitalists did not exist, who are doing what they're doing to us by giving away the world's music for free, which is a lovely thing to do, and for the consumer, but for everybody else, it's a disaster. So you know, that it would be better if we didn't have to deal with the circumstances as they are with Spotify in their dominant position in the world. It would be also better if taxi drivers didn't have to compete with Uber. But, you know, many taxi companies are completely out of business and taxi drivers don't get any work anymore. So they're all driving for Uber or they're doing something else. And that's just how it is, you know. So if you're going to drive for Uber, there are ways to do it in a way where you can make more money or less money, and where you can do things in a way that are, you know, more productive or less productive. I'm sure, not that I know anything about it. I've known nothing about it, but I think it's very similar. The business model for Uber and for Spotify are almost identical. So I think probably whether you're an Uber worker or a Spotify musician, you know, you're dealing with very similar kinds of problems. It would be nice if, you know, if Spotify paid a transparent certain amount of money per stream, per song stream, so musicians had any idea what kind of money they were going to be getting every month, which, you know, the checks you get every month have nothing to do with how many songs have been streamed that month. So, you know, there's a lot of problems with the way things are, but the way things are the way things are. So so it's a good question. What are the problems? Because in a way, it's hard to say, because that's just how it is, right? But that hopefully gives you some answer to that question, Luca. And to quote Rage, why stand on a silent platform? Yeah, that's exactly right, Logan. Yeah, that's exactly the problem. Like and that was probably when Tom was asked something about why he signed to this major label. And I think if that was a response to that question, then I think it's an excellent response and makes very good sense. And yeah, does anybody else have any questions? If you do, please just type them in to your platform that you're watching on, and I will do my best to respond to them. I have notes here. I've been glancing at as I've been going, and I'm up to the section on somehow or other on things to avoid in terms of practices regarding sharing music online, and one thing to avoid is promoting bad content. If you are trying to share your music, and if you're trying to, whether you're trying to like use Patreon or some other platform to monetize the sharing of your music in some way and you know, to make any money from it or just to get it out there, there's very little point no point at all in sharing songs that were not well written and in sharing stuff that was recorded so badly that you can't tell what's going on, or, you know, you can't hear the words. You know, I mean, I am very guilty of having done lots of really bad recordings of good songs. And that's a terrible thing, because you're not doing any service to a good song by recording it really badly. And I'm not talking about, you know, having to record it that well, but just recording it where the mic is placed in such a way that you can hear all the words and you can hear the guitar at the same time. You know, getting it to that point of technical success is very necessary. Otherwise, there's no point. And no point in sharing a song that wasn't well written, even if you think that maybe by next week you'll write a better version, or by next week you might record a better version. Don't tell us about that. Nobody wants to know that you're going to record a better version, or you're going to, you know, don't just send us the good version after you do that and spare us the junk. And another thing to avoid is apologizing for asking for help. If people don't want to help you, because if you're a musician and you're trying to get by playing music and you don't want to work for Uber, and some people think you're an idiot because you should be working for Uber and why should you make a living as a musician, you don't need their help. Just ignore those people. And there's very few people who are going to talk like that. Just ignore those people. You want support from people who value what you're doing and think that it matters. For whatever reason, whether for artistic or political reasons or both or whatever. If people think that what you're doing matters and has value, because, you know, it does, and you know that music and whatever you're doing probably has value, otherwise you probably wouldn't be doing it and you probably wouldn't be looking for support for it. You have to know that your music has value. You know, if it doesn't, then, you know, why bother, right? But if you think your music has value, as you probably do, then just and you don't need to tell people, oh, this has such value, please support me, but you don't need to apologize for asking for support. I mean, because that sort of implies that you don't think your music has value, and then why should anybody support you? You know, that's the thing. You know, then people will be like, okay, he doesn't think his music has value and he's apologizing for asking, so I'm not going to support him, because, you know, who wants to get all, you know, who wants to inspire all these apologies? You know, you want, when you support somebody, you don't want them to apologize. You know, it makes you feel bad when people apologize. You know, you, like, you've just done something wrong by supporting them. Now they're apologizing for accepting your support. No. It's just wrong on every side of that equation. You know, if you want to, if somebody supports you, thank them. And, if you're looking for support because you have no other means of recording this album or no other means of paying your rent, if you want to keep on spending all your time doing music and stuff, you know, then you need to put that out there. Otherwise, people don't know. You know, you might be independently wealthy. You know, a lot of people are, not that many, but, you know, enough that, you know, people might just assume, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe they got inheritance and they don't need my support. You know, I know musicians like that. And that's fine. But you got to be able to say, what's your situation? And why do you need support, if you need support? And be very upfront about it and not apologetic. But also, don't be desperate about it by sending out junk and trying to get support for that. You know, you need to produce something that's worthy of support. If you're just trying to get crowdfunding for to pay your rent and you're not an artist, then that's fine too. Do a crowdfunder for that. But don't pretend you'd be an artist. If, you know, if you're an artist, be an artist and put out good art and then get support for it. And when you're asking for support for anything, then offer something. Don't send another email to your list or another post on Facebook about your need to pay the rent. You know, if that's all you're doing, you know, you need to. If you're an artist, then you know, kind of be an artist. You know, just you know, if you haven't written a song, record a song that somebody else wrote and do something, and then send it out there, and then tell them that you're trying to pay the rent. You know. Just reading a comment there. Yeah, apologize for when you legitimately screw something up. Don't apologize for trying to make a living off your work. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. That should certainly be said. I'm not advocating that you don't apologize for anything. Apologizing is a very good thing when you are being an idiot and learning from your mistakes and owning up to them. That's a whole other matter. But don't apologize for being poor. Although in our society, it's understandable why people do, you know, it's just, I'm just telling you, it's not going to help you actually crowdfund. Another thing I would recommend against is using too many adjectives, you know, overhyping things. I mean, it is the norm in this country. There's a lot of maybe pros and cons to it, but basically it's it doesn't come off well at all in cultures outside of the United States. It comes off as complete idiocy, and it also, you know, it's been overdone for many centuries now, and we could just move on from that and just start communicating a little more directly and less dramatically, perhaps. But I think for the general audience out there, when you're thinking about people outside of the United States, especially. Using fewer adjectives and fewer exclamation points is actually going to help you be communicating with people. Not, it won't hurt. And another thing I would say avoid is, although it's good to give away exclusive content now and then for your paid supporters to make them feel really special, it's also really good not to do that too much, because you will start, people will start, you know, feeling like, oh, what's this guy? He's just trying to get us to become his paid supporters. And otherwise he's just not going to get, he's not going to share his music anymore. You know, it's all exclusive behind the firewall, you know? So no, I would say don't do that. It'll backfire. And there's a lot of other things that's unproductive about that, But it's good to do to some extent to offer stuff for your paid supporters that nobody else gets, whether physical or digital. And perhaps the most obvious point of all, but also one that bears mentioning, I noticed certainly for people out there, that don't be posting something with multiple links on Facebook. Don't be trying to share multiple stories or multiple songs, or, you know, this is the whole point of it. Of the medium is you're destroying by doing that. You have to you have to share things one at a time and give lots of space in between each time you do it, you know, and be very deliberate and very clear that this is the one song you're sharing, not this and this. You know, it doesn't work that way. Don't share links whenever possible. Share things that are embedded or like a native app or whatever you call it, like a video that's actually playing in Facebook rather than a link to some other video, because very few people will see those links. If you want to actually people to see your stuff, then it needs to be in other forms than a link. And it's totally bizarre, but I made these notes and I started talking, and it's been 53 minutes and 54 minutes, and that's kind of what I had in mind, and I don't know how the hell that happened, but this has been a webinar on DIY music in a time of pandemic, and I hope I said at least two things that were useful here somewhere. And if you want to listen to it after the fact again, you can find it in the Discussions with David playlist on YouTube, and you can find it soon in podcast form. In a few hours, you'll find it in podcast form if you search for This Week with David Rovix on any podcasting app, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, and all that. And you can find it at davidrovix.com and on the David Rovix mobile app, which you can get on either of the app stores for your mobile device. And I hope to see you guys, whoever you are out there, for interviews I'll be doing with various wonderful folks over the next several days. It'll be Jim Page tomorrow on Tuesday from Seattle, one of the best songwriters on the planet. And then again, starting on Monday the 27th, every Monday, I intend to host an open mic here on StreamYard, and you can sign up now if you go to davidrovix.com/quarantine or davidrovix.com/POMM. It's Pandemic Open Mic Mondays, and you can sign up for the open mic, and I hope to see you here in a week at the Pandemic Open Mic, and before then for interviews I'll be doing every morning, every weekday morning for the rest of this week. And thank you so much for listening. I hope it has been educational, enjoyable, or at least not painful. And I hope to see you soon here in the Matrix and eventually on the streets. Bye-bye for now.